It's time for the movie raid, and tonight's victim is actor and acting performance artist John Fleck, that played in Waterworld, Falling Down, and amongst others. Hello.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
So what's going on?
What's going on? I'm here in L.A., staring out a window at a gray sky, waiting for the rain to fall. Other than that, I'm just working on a play right now, rehearsing, and I'm getting ready to go to New York to do my one-man show called Blacktop Highway, which is a gothic horror screenplay that I narrate and play all the parts.
And you also done a couple musical numbers.
I do musicals and dramas and stuff like that. You know, you also mentioned Waterworld. I mean, I presume you're more interested in film than TV, huh?
Both.
Oh, both. Okay. Well, I also did a lot of Star Trek. You know, there's only three actors who have done as many roles in all the Star Trek TV series, and I'm one of the three, whatever that's worth. And I also played Gecko, the lizard man, on HBO's Carnival. So, for about, I guess, 5 years, all I did was play freaks from with a lot of makeup, you know, 6 hours in the makeup chair. I played non-human beings. But now I'm playing human beings again, so that's good.
Which one do you prefer?
I prefer to play a human being. I think that's a little more fun. but it usually doesn't pay as much as the non-human being, so...
But over the course of performing on stage, what direction do you feel yourself more comfortable in between film and in the stage?
I'm definitely a man of the stage and the theater. I mean, TV and film is great, you know, and the money is much better than you make on the stage. I've always liked to do both. And I think TV and film is probably more for my ego, so to speak. It's like an ego job, like, oh, especially living here in L.A., that values the film, you know, TV medium so much more than stage. Stage is like the poor cousin living in the gutter here. So I kind of developed that mentality that to be valid as an actor, I had to do film and TV. So, but I have straddled both, and I do more. At this point in my career and my life, I'm doing more stage and my own work. I'm doing more than film, TV. Now, as I get older here, I'm not working as much in the TV film world, you know? I mean, there's a little ageism going on here. I mean, I'm over 60 now, but the theater still welcomes me. So what can I say? That's where I have more power. I have more control over that area of my career.
That portion of the theater, do you think it's kind of fading a little bit as time goes on when we got all these great new techniques of filming? And of course, you always have younger viewers, younger actors emerging out film after film. But do you think they're starting to forget about all the way back to theater days?
Yeah. Well, that's the old, you know, saying around theater. Theater is for the older folks. You know, the younger folks don't go to theater unless there's other young folks in the theater. But hey, you know, but for an actor, I'm sorry, say what you will about, you know, you don't get to use your chops as much, you know, working on a film as you do carrying a live play. I mean, there's some magic that happens on the live stage that doesn't happen in a televised, you know, medium through that, you know, that a performance can be enhanced through editing. You know, I just love the, you know, when shit falls apart on stage and you have to recover. Because that's my work is always about things falling apart. And to me, perhaps, you know, outmoded and who cares anymore. But I don't know. There's a magic. I just got back from New York. I was there for 6 days and I saw like 10 shows. And New York, man, still takes theater very seriously. So thank God.
The control tends to be a little bit too tightening on some aspects between the both, because you want to get out there. You want to do what you can do. And hopefully the outcome turns out well.
Unless you're, you know, doing the editing, you know, yourself in a media, that media, you're out of control as an actor, you know, because somebody's creating your performance through editing, and whereas on stage, there ain't no controls except for what you're given there, so.
Where do you think self-expression comes from?
Well, I mean, we all get into acting. I mean, I'm just talking from an acting point of view to express ourselves, but, you know, that's in an interpretive, creative form. I'm expressing someone else's writing. When I started creating my performance art back in the 80s, I created my own opportunities by performing in, you know, punk clubs and, you know, and performance spaces like that. Kind of was a cathartic expression and of myself, you know, it was a form of freeing my soul on stage and sharing it with other people, I guess, and mirroring their journeys of self-expression. I don't know, I'm just blah,
There are some people that have a different views on their performance between their characters and media as far as acting and goes.
Right. Well, I think depending on point of view, I mean, all performance can be looked at it politically, but mine is creating passion and creating unpredictability on a stage. And like I said, that's for what I do. I think that's more important than anything I've ever done in film or TV, because it's just so live and so real and so dangerous. I like to go into dangerous taboo territory that kind of might offend some people, but can also provoke, kind of create interesting dialogue with other people, if that makes any sense.
Because you have the crowd there, you have the reaction. You don't exactly see that reaction when you know the camera's rolling right there, unless there's an audience right there. You want to feel it, you want to see it, you want to be it.
Yeah, and can definitely, when you're in a live venue, you know, you definitely feel it back and forth from an audience. And you know, when you're working in film, nobody can respond because you can't hear them. When you're doing film, you don't want people to think that there's somebody, an audience out there watching you and recording you. So it's just, you know, people get the illusion that it's just you and them, you know, behind the screen watching you on the screen.
You think being unpredictable, you think that's also lacking in both forms?
Sure it is. I mean, that's what, don't you think that's what kind of, that we love about performances? You know, when we, on film or TV, when we're watching something and it doesn't look rehearsed and it looks like it's just being thought of in the moment. I mean, yeah, I mean, God, if it's too predictable and it looks like it's been premeditated, it's boring. So that's what makes great actors, I think, for me, and the great directors and filmmakers as well as theater makers, to give the illusion that it's all happening right now and that, like, it wasn't scripted. Yeah, so I just hate things that look scripted or sound scripted.
Yeah, like each genre, the fantasy seems to be the most one with unpredictable, and that's what I love about, like in sci-fi as well, it's out there not making sense in a sensible way, and I mean that in a good way, and that's the point of it. You're supposed to figure out what that is. It's supposed to get a general idea.
I as an audience, like to work a little, but I don't want everything spelled out for me, so, you know, guide me through the journey, but preach it and tell me I gotta feel this way or I gotta go there. Let me create my own story reflecting off what you're doing, if that makes sense.
Again, it reflects off the viewer of what you're trying to tell. The same thing on stage, what you're trying to tell. And even if it may not make sense to some people, the message will get across. You just gotta get there.
Right. And you know, you gotta have a clear vision as a creator, you know, what you're doing, and hopefully have some sense of how you want an audience to respond to it. Granted, you know, every audience member is different and may respond to different elements of what you're doing.
And it's the year 2016. We're to the point where there's nothing right now, nothing but remakes again, nothing but reboots again. Do you think influence, this is going to affect the viewers in terms of influencing them?
In terms of what? Just remaking the same thing over and over and kind of putting in a different package, but basically the same package with a different label, so to speak. Yeah, I see that happening in New York, like on Broadway. I mean, every other show is based on a film, so, and it's weird, you know. So they're doing a live presentation based on something that was like an illusory media of film. I don't know. I think it's the corporatization, you know, the corporate takeover of all these conglomerates that is kind of stifling originality, and people are swallowing it, and people, I think, in general, are losing some of our imaginations because we're just eating this pablum of yesterday's reboots.
They're just simply trying to, what I call cash-in films or and so forth, just making money off an existing title or franchise and just keep milking it off dry to the point where fans of this film or franchise or stage play are going to dislike it or are going to hate it, even though they used to love it.
Right. I mean, I was just listening to something on NPR about this latest Superman versus Batman movie with Ben Affleck. I forget the name of it. But it's kind of like, ooh, boy, they've run out of juice, and I think they polled people, and people are saying, they're not digging it anymore. It's just, so in a way, maybe they're the cannibalization of all this prepackaged crap. It's backfiring, perhaps, and maybe they'll start creating some new things for us. I don't know.
Yeah, And of course, it's always hard as well. I mean, without a doubt. But having to go back 5-10 years and pick a specific film and then remake it or whatever, and even if it doesn't even need it in terms of story or anything like that, even if it got bad reviews, I mean, you're intentionally running your company into the ground by making terrible remakes. And yet, just make direct to DVD. Maybe you get some of your money back.
These companies like making tons of money though, repackaging this crap and like squeezing every last penny out of this crap. I mean they are making money on this repackaging because people are buying it still, aren't they?
At some point, yeah. I mean, you watch it in the theaters, but then you're like, oh god, that's horrible. Why do you even watch this? And I've been hearing a lot of bad things about it, and it's like,
yeah, I have no desire to see it. That's for certain. Yeah. Well, hey, you know, bad word of mouth ain't good for, you know, the next sequel to it. So.
Oh no, we're gonna make spinoffs instead.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Exactly. They'll make spinoffs. Right.
Tons of spinoffs. There's tons. Right now, there's tons of superhero related spinoffs and sequels and so forth. But if you look back, it's all about statistics. You see how well one superhero film became. And because at some point you're going to get tired of Batman, you're going to get tired of Superman and Spider-Man, and finally we're going to, hey, there's other characters in on these comic books, even if you're not a huge comic book fan. Well, let's try.
Ant-Man. I was listening to the review on the new one out, the with Robert Downey. What's this new one called? And they got every Marvel character.
Oh yeah,
they got Ant-Man.
They got Civil War.
But he's a new spin-off character.
Yeah, Civil War is the current one that's on the buzz as well. And I mean, okay, I'm interested in seeing these guys fight against each other or fight with each other or whatever they're supposed to do. And and chances are we're going to see another spinoff of the same thing, or they'll go back in time or some. I don't know. But we will see. Always give the film a chance at least. It looks interesting, but I'm curious of how these characters are going to go. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's see what happens. It's already pre-sold like $227 million worth of tickets and hasn't really even opened yet. So it's going to make them billions. So yippee for them, I guess.
Huh? Hey, no video game?
Yeah. Oh, boy, Robert Downey Jr., he must have more money than God now.
I read that he has more trailers than his own cast.
I believe it.
Huh? He's got like apparently 3 additional trailers attached to his one big trailer compared to everybody else's. And this was on the Civil War set.
I hope he's happy. That's all I
can. What do you consider between stage and film? What do you consider as a challenge?
Well, they're both challenges in their own way. I mean, you know, for me, being a stage, coming from a stage background, I was very operatic. You know, I used to have a 4-octave voice and I'd write these operas. So when I started doing TV and film, the challenge for me was to bring it down, to really keep it simple. And because that cameraman, it's a magnifying glass, and you know, every gesture, every tick, every eye movement you see, and the closer it gets to you, know, they keep coming in closer every take. It's just like, wow, you gotta say as much with as little effort as possible, so to speak. The challenge for me on stage is, shit, is remembering all those words and all those lines and all the action you gotta do, you know? Yeah, there you have it.
So, do you have any other related projects, or are you just going to do a whole slew of shows?
Well, like I said, I have this show called Blacktop Highway, and I've been workshopping it here in L.A., and I'm taking it to New York for 3 weeks in November. And I think it's one of my best shows I've ever done. And there's a lot of multimedia in it. I play all these different characters, and it eventually becomes a film by the end of the piece. And so I'd like to travel with that a little bit. I also signed on to doing a play actually today here in L.A. By this playwright David Greenspan, and that's going to be a really challenge, a big challenge for me. You know, I'm just taking it one day at a time. Yeah, there you have it.
And there you have it. And that is John Fleck, actor, performance actor.
Hey, thanks, Mike.